The Survivor Specialist Phil, John, and McKenna are back, and today we're doing another defining episode. Today we are talking about Cerise. From Survivor Panama, we're talking, of course, episode number 12, Perilous Scramble. There was no question about this. We were talking first season. You could say if we were doing like, you know, any season, you have plenty of stuff in Micronesia that you could pull from. But when it comes to her Panama game, there's no question it had to be Perilous Scramble. And I haven't rewatched all of the episodes for this series. Obviously, as everybody knows, we've been alternating back and forth. So we went Jenna Lewis, then we went a 48, then we went Colby, then we went another 48, then we went Stephanie, then we went another 48. Now we're doing Ceri, and then we're going to do Genevieve. I haven't rewatched all the episodes, but this one, it's kind of like, hey, you know, John, you and I as the movie guys, it's like, well, we got to do The Godfather for a podcast. All right, I'll carve out the 3 hours to watch The Godfather. That's kind of what this feels like. I don't need to do this one from memory because there's just such a joy to watching Ceri absolutely dominate and do something we've never seen before. And this is where the Ceri legend is born. It's not when Timbertina goes. It's not when she just like sits back and lets Melinda do her thing. This is the moment because this is when the Survivor game has to start being played on Panama. And McKenna, you're wearing your Panama buff. You're ready to go.
Yeah, I'm here and ready. Panama is one of my top favorite seasons. I love Panama. Every time I rewatch it, it's always a good time. And I think it really, like, I've always liked Panama, but then it really, you know, sunk in that, man, this is a damn good season when you and Alexa did that rewatch of Panama 100 years ago. And I was like, you know, having commentary about the episodes, being able to like dissect it, it was just amazing. And so Ceri starting on this like season of chaos is really interesting because she is like calculated, particular, you know, and we have someone like Shane that she has to try and manage, Danielle that she has to try and manage, Courtney that she has to try and manage. So she really gets like the broad spectrum of, you know, Survivor in this season.
I'm not even surprised that when we talk about Ceri, like having Ceri come back for 50, it was one of those things where everyone was like, okay, do we really need to see Ceri a fifth time? And when you rewatch this episode, you understand why we're getting Ceri for a fifth time. We are understanding why Ceri has been on three other reality TV shows in the last 2 years. Like, you understand why the fandom still loves Ceri. And yes, we might get fatigued from seeing her over and over and over again, but this is a masterclass in Survivor. This episode is genuinely just, it's a piece of Survivor art presented on a pedestal from a player who people essentially wrote off at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
I feel like I get fatigued by the idea of Ceri, but then when I'm watching a season that she's in, I'm like, yes, of course. I love her. Of course I want to watch her play. It's only like the idea of, oh, Ceri's going to be on the season. Oh, do I need to see her? And then when you're watching, it's like, yes, I need to see her, or at least for me.
Well, it's funny because as we're doing the heroes versus villains over on Patreon, I've been talking about like a little bit of Parvati exhaustion with that. And I know, McKenna, that's like heresy. I can't say that in front of you. But it's funny because people are commenting saying that they disagree with me and all that. In my head, I always feel like, you know, with Parv, it's like, is she at that level? And then when you watch Heroes versus Villains, you're like, this is so entertaining. It's just with Ceri and Parv, I lumped them kind of together because they were the same era. They're known for very similar things, except Parv has her ring. Ceri doesn't have her ring. Mm-hmm. But they're known for very similar things. They've both played the traitors now. They're both going to be on AU versus the world. And the thing is, the reason why I kind of put them together is they have this fan base. And Survivor has loved them so much that we have seen them kind of beaten to death here. They've just been rammed down our throats of, we're going to watch them over and over and over and over and over and over again. And it's kind of led to them potentially being a little overrated, right? Like, especially with Ceri, always considered the best to never win. And you say to yourself, okay, but she's played four times. She's about to play her fifth. Maybe there's something in her game that's just not clicking. Maybe it's on her. And then you rewatch this and you say, no, it's just kind of what it was. And the same thing with Parv. When you watch Heroes vs. Villains, you see some of the moves she makes. Cerie's moment in this episode to understand where everybody is going to vote, how she can manipulate that. And really it all begins when she overhears Danielle and Courtney talking about Terry says the top two are going to go to the final three, which little do Danielle and Courtney know that that would mean that they're in the final two. Terry's thinking he's making a great deal for himself, but he's not. So Cerie overhears that and goes, what's that all about? And Danielle opens up to her and Cerie says, well, of course, Terry's going to say that he can beat you both. He knows he's finishing top two. Mm-hmm. And this gets it spinning in Cerie's head because she knows now that Courtney and Terry are going to vote the way that they're going to vote. They're going to vote for Aris if Aris loses. They know that she knows that Shane thinks that the vote is going on Danielle because everybody has this one thing in common. Everybody who's not voting with Cerie in this episode has one thing in common. They want to go to the end with Courtney. That mm-hmm. is the goal. And so because of that, Cerie's able to manipulate this. And when you watch this happen, this is where I do say to myself, though, I really miss back before there was an overload of advantages, right? Because we had just gone through the four very boring Lamina boots or the three boring Lamina boots followed by Bruce being pulled from the game. But then you get this moment. And all they're worried about is Terry's immunity idol, which he wins immunity anyway, so it doesn't even come into play. This is a 3-2-1 vote where Terry's not even an option. So it's not like the immunity idol matters in any way, shape, or form. This is just a replay mm-hmm. in Survivor. It's brilliant, and it's just so much fun to watch.
And building on what you're saying there, Phil, it's Cerie's awareness of game state. And that's what makes her such a phenomenal player, is she can evaluate everyone's single position in a game at any time. She is the person, you can stick her on the beach, and probably within like half an hour, she can tell the entire hierarchy of a tribe and where she fits into it and who she has to speak to in order to position herself better. The thing with Cerie is she almost advantaged by being so bad at challenges.
Yeah.
Because she is someone people are willing to take.
In the reward challenge of like, I'm not going to win this. All right, continue, Jeff. Yeah,
exactly, right? And because of that, she's taken further into the game. But she makes up for it so much in that social awareness and then also her social ability. The way she speaks to people in this episode is spectacular. It's the little hints. It's the subtlety in her game. It's the, oh, but do you really just want to be third, Danielle? Mm-hmm. Right? It's those little things that she does to poke this situation to make it go her way, to make it be one of the most impressive votes in Survivor history. The way that she can evaluate, there is someone taking my spot in the final two. And that's who the biggest threat in the game is. The entire time through this episode, we're hearing her confessionals of Courtney is someone everyone wants to sit beside. That makes her my biggest threat. It doesn't matter that Terry and Aris have the ability to win every single challenge here. It matters that someone is guaranteed to be sitting in the end.
Because at the end of the day, Terry and Aris don't want to sit next to each other. Terry and Aris want to take each other out. Exactly. And Cerie knows that. So as long as both of them are still in the game, those are people that are going to continuously target each other. Courtney is somebody that nobody's ever going to target. And we hear this argument all the time, even in the new era, when you start to hear about, why didn't you take the goat to the end? Why weren't you more willing to take the goat a little bit further along, the person who is annoying everybody? We heard this in 48 with Say felt like somebody that you could drag to the end, or Charity. It felt like somebody you would want to keep around longer. And but that's taking up potentially my seat. If that person's in the game at final four, they're going to be dragged and I'm going to be making fire if I'm not the one who wins. And Cerie really is one of the first people to recognize that and try to do something mm-hmm. about it.
And she also has at this final six that she has three very important relationships here to get all the information with Shane, Aris, and Danielle. So she knows where all the votes are going because she has all three plans laid out for her, or is telling Aris, like, we need to save you, let's do this. And she's just really good at those, like, very personal relationships.
Yeah. And it's on display here because the only person Cerie doesn't have a relationship with is Terry, and the two of them don't need to have a relationship mm-hmm. because with Lamina versus Kasaya, Cerie and Terry, it's funny that those were the two rooting interests on this season, and they're the most opposite type players you could ever imagine. Terry's not coming up with a 3-2-1, but Cerie's not winning four straight immunity challenges. So it's it's very funny how different the two of them are, and yet that's who people were rooting for. And so the other thing with this is the only way to pull this off is if you know that there's different plans going on. And like you just said, McKenna, she has a really good relationship with Shane here. And I think that's something that gets overlooked mm-hmm. in kind of Survivor history is Ceree has played with everybody. She's more known for playing with the women because of what takes place in Micronesia. But, yeah, I don't know why I couldn't think of that. But when you think about her Micronesia game in this season, she's actually closest with Aris and Shane. And so because mm-hmm. she has Shane, but she also knows that she is the, it's kind of like what Kyle did with Joe and Shaheen. Mm-hmm. She knows that she is the person that's kind of serving as the in-between from a strategy standpoint. Shane and Aris will have conversations together, but Ceree is the one who is divvying out the information that is needed about who's going to vote for who. Because if Shane finds out that Courtney's getting the votes here, he probably goes with Terry and Courtney and tries to force a tie here. And Terry would have been all for forcing a tie. And I don't know if Shane would have totally understood the rules enough to realize that he'd be the only one from his alliance mm-hmm. in trouble if there was a rock draw. But I could have seen him doing something like that and potentially trying to force Danielle's hand. But Ceree knew that it was never really going to get back to Shane.
Mm-hmm. And I think Shane would have been blinded by that lovely fish that Ceree brought in this episode. I mean, she's providing for the tribe now. Come on. Like, she's so well-rounded.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, McKenna, because it is such an important part of the Ceree story that we get to see in this episode, too, is we view Ceree as, you know, the strategic mastermind of the game, and we see her play circles around people in these social strategy games, but she's also the person who got up off the couch, and that's the big part of the Ceree story that we've always we've been force-fed it many, many times by Jeff, but this is showing it, right? Like, there's such a celebration in Ceree catching this quite good-sized fish, and mm-hmm. Shane being like, Terry's been out there, like, every day and can't do anything, but Ceree's the one doing it because Ceree just decided I'm catching a fish, and it's the determination from Ceree to get something done. And that's what we see from her game every single time. We see her, it doesn't matter what position she's in, it doesn't matter who she is opposing to. If she is setting a plan in motion, she is just setting her mind to it. She's out there, she says, I'm going to catch a fish. She goes and catches a fish, and it's mm-hmm. something to be super proud of. And it's almost this distraction from all the conniving she's doing underneath the surface.
Yeah, it is one of those like good, wholesome moments. But you also know that this is really buttering up her relationship with Shane. And she's able to really use that this episode and in the future.
Yeah. And for anybody who's like, Phil, you're not paying attention, but John and McKenna are saying, I have two laptops set up right now because I'm at my parents' house. So when I'm doing this, I'm looking over here and I'm typing things in because the internet's not great and I don't want to mess up the stream over here. But I love that you brought up the fish thing, because this really also, this episode's not just about Ceree's strategic strengths, right? This is also about who she is as a person. I know that when McKenna first typed this up, McKenna and John discussed what episodes should we consider. And when we didn't know that we were just going to go based off the first season, I have it right here. Panama premiere, 3-2-1 in Panama, GC boot, Eric boot micro, or balance beam. And the balance beam episode for me is one of the most cringeworthy, awful moments in Survivor history. Jeff loves it. I'm like, I don't need to watch a woman that we've watched play three times and almost win twice cross a balance beam so that I feel better about her. Like, I already love Ceree. Don't turn this into a middle school gym class where everybody cheers for the kid who normally stinks at every sport. And so this, though, is so authentic, right? She just says, it's just me and Shane back at camp. Shane's crazy. I don't feel like sitting around him. So I'm going to go catch a fish. And not only do I catch a fish, I catch a fish that everybody can eat that's actually huge. And why not? It's so authentic. So when we're trying to come up with what is Ceree's defining episode, this shows her strategic prowess, her social prowess, but also that final evolution of the growth of, I am no longer the person who's on my couch. I am now the person who can also be a provider. And if I was stranded out here by myself, maybe you all should trust me with your life the way you all trust Terry with your life.
I mean, it ties into the another episode that I thought of, which was the premiere of Panama, where they boot Timbertina, even though she did catch a fish. Yeah. And like, we can do that. It's fine. It only took her, you know, a few episodes, but she eventually did catch that fish. So, you know, there is that story arc coming with her in this episode for sure.
Yeah. So go ahead, John, anything about Timbertina catching a fish and Suri, the symmetry here, McKenna hitting us with
symmetry. McKenna's just coming at us with like these massive story arcs. And how do you even get a story arc?
I don't know.
I know this is McKenna appreciating the film school. And then we're going to get to the coach episode and she's going to try to tell us that it's not that good, you know? So we'll see how McKenna's film school looks then. I do appreciate that though. Right. Where this was the show of Survivor during Panama, right? Like there's something that about once Vanuatu and Palau are over, I think it's Guatemala for me, where Guatemala is the last season that truly feels like an old school season of Survivor. And then Panama starts to feel like something different because of Suri, because of Terry, because of even Courtney and Shane and Aris, right? Like the way that they're all playing, it starts to feel like a different season, even though it is a pagonging, except that Terry can't go home. But there was so much of an emphasis on what are we doing as people here, right? Not just, you know, challenges. Terry wins the car in this episode, which I always think is funny because there's your curse. But it's not just about the challenges. It's not just about who has an immunity idol and how do we strategize. It's also about these other things. And so what Suri is able to accomplish here, it is a 12 episode arc of look at what this woman did. It's so much different than what you see nowadays, because I don't know if you all have been paying attention to the Survivor 50 files that Brandon Donlan's doing, which, you know, I don't know if we should name drop Brandon Donlan here, but you know, I love
Brandon. We've had him on the podcast.
I know, I'm messing around, but we have, you know, if you listen to some of that stuff, when you start to hear Roger and Tina talking about Colby, as opposed to Alec talking about Mike White and Angelina, it's a totally different world that these two things exist in. And somehow Suri feels like she like bridges that gap.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It's firmly bridged in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
This is the point where Survivor changed from the survival game where you're kind of like working on a social game to this is a strategy game and this is how you play it. And sure, you can make the argument that like we had that all the way back in Borneo with how Hatch throws the final immunity challenge and everything. But there's a reason why no one had done a 3-2-1 vote prior to this moment. There's a reason why we still celebrate 3-2-1 votes, because they're so hard to manipulate and get to the point where you have the information needed in order to pull it off and the social capital to make sure you can pull it off.
How many have we seen? Three?
Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Natalie Anderson's right is probably the second most famous one of these in San Juan del Sur, correct?
Yeah, probably.
We see a lot of like 4-2 or like 3-2-2s. We see a lot of it happen at like 7, but we don't see it at 6 because it's so hard to pull this move off at 6. Because that's the point when everyone's really focused on the end game. That's why everyone gets incredibly, their strategy focuses more on themselves and getting themselves to the end because they're so close to the end. And the variables involved with a vote like this, they've changed. They've changed from earlier on where, like, I mean, we see those votes at like 9 and 11 that tend to be the big votes in a season and kind of define the season.
Mm-hmm.
We see that happening there because they're the numbers to pull things off. It's so hard to pull something off at 6 people, especially when it's 5 people you've been in an alliance with the entire game.
Yeah.
And that's what changed Survivor. That is why Suri changed Survivor with this moment. That's why you can't really have a season 50 without Suri Fields.
Yeah. And I'm going to get yelled at for saying it was a 3-2-1. So I have to correct myself real quick. It was a 2-2-2 that Natalie pulled off. So even then, like she had all the information, but it was a 2-2-2 that then goes to a revote and that's where it happened. So like what Suri did, I forget the other 3-2-1s. I'm not that good at remembering everything, but Suri has to be on 50. She hasn't won. She's the biggest non-winner. She stayed positive in the community in a way that some of the other people who are considered the greatest to never win haven't.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have her on. But I do understand why there's the exhaustion. The problem is, yes, we get the Eric situation in Fans versus Favorites. In Cerie's last two seasons, though, we haven't seen anything that's come close to what we saw in her first two seasons. And I think that's also where a little bit of the exhaustion comes from, because it's what else is she going to provide? What new is Cerie going to provide?
Going back to like her in that middle of old school versus middle school, new school kind of feel, she says Danielle is easy to turn and easy to manipulate. And that isn't something we would see in like an old era kind of episode, because they don't want to manipulate. They don't want to dupe or anything like that bad. So Cerie being able to recognize, I need to kind of convince Danielle, lay the seeds to plant the tree, earlier on in the episode, of like, Terry's plan is kind of whack if you really think about it, for her to eventually use Danielle's vote to like flip her away from Terry after that reward.
And I think this is my last point on this, because McKenna, I agree with what you're saying here. I think what's so impressive about what Cerie did here, you see so often in Survivor, people who don't feel like Cerie knows she's going to be fourth, right? She knows she's fourth in every plan right now. So often people then try to take all power, and I need to be in control and I need to demand the game. Cerie never makes it seem like this move is the best move for her. She makes it seem like it's the best move for everybody. And that's what convinces Danielle to go along with it, because she convinces Danielle, this is better for your game. Now you're in final three with me and Aris. Guess what? Aris has taken you. He's not taken me. Now, obviously, we find out later that he probably would have taken Cerie. Mm-hmm. But that's the argument that she can make and say, you don't have to go up against Terry, who's been unbeatable, and Courtney, who he's absolutely going to take to the end. You have a better chance. So she's able to take power without feeling like, you know, when you watch Heroes versus Villains and you see what Russell does, every moment when he votes Danielle out of the game, it's literally because I need to have all power. That's what needs to happen. Cerie doesn't do that. And that's probably the most impressive thing about her style of play. And it just, this is where it's the best highlighted.
I think the thing with Cerie is she doesn't have to be at the forefront of the power, but always has the power.
Yeah.
In every single situation, right? We see it here where she is the only one. She is the only one who will determine how this votes goes. We see it in Micronesia with the Eric boot, right? She is the one who comes up with the idea of like, can we just get him to give it up? We see it even when we're looking at her other games. We're looking at like her Big Brother game, right? She is able to manipulate people into thinking they are the ones controlling the game when she's pulling all the strings in the background. That's what's so impressive about Cerie. Is it the flashiest game? No. Is it something you can really like point to and frame in an episode of Survivor all that well? No. But when it hits harder than anything else we'll ever see on screen.
And even in Heroes versus Villains, she's in the Power Alliance.
She just happens to get idled out.
Yeah, it's just an idol. And really, if JT doesn't flip, Cerie might be sitting at final five or six of that season. So, all right, well, that's Cerie's defining episode. So, Perilous Scramble, go watch episode number 12 of Survivor Panama to get yourself amped. It's so worth it. And we're going to be back next time talking, is that blood in your hair from Genevieve? So I know that some people were thinking, oh, maybe they would do Operation Italy. No, this is the Genevieve episode talking, is that blood in your hair, which is episode number 4 of Survivor 47. So that'll be our next episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you then.